Tonight on Banfield, Illinois buried a police officer today, the one who was murdered with her own gun, as prosecutors work to make a federal case of her murder. That could mean the death penalty for one or both of the suspects, and one of them is pregnant. Also, they say the best defense is a good offense, but how do you defend against this? A brutal attack in a broad daylight bus station. And as far back as he can remember, he wanted to be a gangster, but Google put a stop to it. We'll tell you how ahead on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. It all started with barking dogs. And while it is far too early to know how this story ends, already we have a veteran police officer dead, a young officer fighting for his life, an alleged shooter with a mile-long rap sheet, and a pregnant girlfriend both behind bars. There's also a prosecutor vowing to seek the death penalty, even though Illinois abolished capital punishment. Today in a college chapel about 40 miles south of Chicago, hundreds of police officers, relatives, and friends of Marlene Ritmanick gathered to honor her life. Ritmanick was a poet, a filmmaker, and since 2007, an officer with the Bradley, Illinois Police Department. She rose to the rank of sergeant. On Wednesday of last week, she and her partner, Tyler Bailey, responded to a report of barking dogs in a parked car at a Comfort Inn. They ran the plate and they traced the car's owner to a room at the motel. And they knocked on that door for 14 minutes before Zandra Harris opened it just a crack, just enough to slip out. Harris is the 26-year-old pregnant girlfriend of Darius Sullivan, who, at the ripe young age of 25, had 44 arrests or citations and multiple active warrants as of that night. As of tonight, he has more, as does Harris. Because just after Harris slipped through the crack of that motel room door, Sullivan, young man on the left there, allegedly swung the door wide open and began firing a handgun at the officers. Officer Bailey was shot in the head, critically wounded, and he's still alive. But it is not clear if he will remain that way. Sergeant Ritmanick ran. But Sullivan and Harris allegedly chased her down in the hallway and got a hold of her gun. And then Sullivan allegedly shot her twice in the neck with her own weapon, but only after Ritmanick begged for her life. The county prosecutor says Ritmanick's body cam recorded her final words. And these are them. "Just leave. You don't have to do this. Please, just go. Please, don't. Please don't." But allegedly they did. And now that prosecutor is planning to ask the federal Justice Department to bring federal murder charges that would make Ritmanick's alleged killers eligible for the death penalty, pregnant or not. Today at her funeral, Ritmanick's wife, her name is Lynn Stua, she gave a eulogy, absolutely brimming with grief and anger, but also with humor. And I want you to hear a bit of it.
"I'm wearing white today because heroes wear white, and I need to represent my hero. I volunteered to write and deliver my wife's eulogy, one, because I knew the passionate, loving, and wonderful woman she is, and two, because she's not here to critique me. She was fiercely in love with me, and I was fiercely in love with her. Our bodies were born for each other. The sole reason for my existence was to love and support her. Marlene Ritmanick Stua, you are my whole reason for living. You are my hero, and my heart is empty without you. I will ensure swift and reflective vengeance for you. Hug our mothers, sisters, and previous hounds. Rest in peace, my love."
My first guest feels this nightmare in his bones, literally. Daryl Hope is a sergeant with the Dalton, Illinois Police Department who in 2018 was shot 3 times in a robbery attempt. He spent a year and a half recovering and still has a bullet in his back. Sergeant, thank you so much for being with me tonight. I want to ask you about your story, but first I just want to get your reaction to this unbelievable news.
I am very saddened with the outcome of that incident. There is no little incident or big incident. You can't take any for granted. That officer and the other officer are one's recovering and one's dead. Shame.
Sergeant Hope, tell me what happened to you, because I don't know that people really understand. When you hear a police officer was shot and survived and is recovering, I'm not so sure how recovered you can be.
That's a good question. It is a process and a never-ending process. I was fortunate to come through this, but I still have the lingering effects. I still have the scars, the nerve damage. I still have a bullet in my back. It's a constant reminder of what we go through. That night when I got shot, I was shot 3 times. And in that process of healing, I lost the use of my left arm for 6 months. My leg was injured severely, and I had a bullet that went through my stomach, and it cracked my L5 and is currently positioned between my aorta and my L3.
What happened to your attempted murderers?
As I was defending myself, I announced my office and I shot. I was able to get my weapon and return fire. I shot one of the assailants. He's currently awaiting my trial.
I want to, if I can, Sergeant, I'd love for you to stay with me, but I do want to bring another voice into this conversation. Dan Eckhart is a criminal defense attorney and a former federal prosecutor in Central Florida. You know, Dan, when I heard that the prosecutor in Illinois, without the tool of having the death penalty at their disposal in Illinois, decided, well, you know what? I have another option here. I can go to the feds and I can ask the feds to come in on this one. And there is federal death penalty. This is a very rare move. What are the odds that this is actually going to happen?
Well, unfortunately, the odds are pretty low, in my opinion, that that's going to happen. I think the prosecutor's heart's in the right place. And you know, my prayers go out to the family of the officers and the officers that were shot. It's a terrible, tragic situation. I think the prosecutor is looking for, you know, some way to reconcile maybe some of the political atmosphere in Chicago with the officers and the issues that we've experienced in the last year with having, you know, this shooting. But realistically, I don't see much of a chance that the U.S. Attorney's Office is going to find a way to prosecute them federally.
I mean, I think there'll be a lot of people listening, and that will fall very unsatisfyingly on their ears.
Yeah, I know that. And I, you know, look, it's one of those situations where, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the federal government, is limited. Limited jurisdiction. There's got to be a place or statute that they can fit with the crime. And I did look at the press release from the state attorney, from the district attorney's office, and the cases he cited, you know, he cited this precedent, and I looked at the precedent, and both the cases are actually cases that have federal jurisdiction. One case is a kidnapping case out of Illinois where a student, I think she was at Illinois University, was kidnapped. That's a federal crime. She was killed. And the other case is still pending. That's a carjacking case. That's a federal crime that's pending that was out of Tennessee. So those are instances in which a police officer was killed. In the first case, it was during a carjacking. He was actually tried to apprehend the alleged carjacker. He was shot, eventually killed, and his police vehicle was used in that crime. So that, those are the circumstances that the prosecutor pointed to, which, again, there's a federal anchor there. Unfortunately, with this case, from my perspective, unless there's something else that comes out in the case, it looks like, unfortunately, just a state case. And for the feds to grab onto to a case and take it, there has to be a compelling federal interest. And there's a compelling state interest, no question. You have a police officer,
sure, yeah.
Two officers that were shot.
Well, and now, you know, two were shot. One of those officers, Tyler Bailey, is fighting for his life.
Right.
Will probably never be the same if he does survive. I am interested in the kidnapping component because, you know, Officer Ritmanek was pinned down while this officer, Tyler Bailey, was obviously unable to render any aid to his partner, to her. But she was pinned down and there was a struggle and a fight, which I think could be considered a kidnapping element. I remember OJ's case. They moved someone from, you know, a few feet away and that was considered, you know, kidnapping. Let me ask you, Sergeant Hope, about the notion of this being, to me, this was a huge story. To me, this was massive. We're leading the newscast with this because this officer was gunned down in cold blood. There's a boyfriend with a rap sheet that is a mile long. I think we might even have a picture of the rap sheet. You won't be able to read it because we can't fit it all on one screen unless we make it really small. And then she's pregnant, but they still want the death penalty for her. So there were so many elements of this heinous crime. But I watched cable news all day, and I didn't see it covered. And I remember a day when if a police officer was killed, especially by somebody with this kind of a rap sheet, this was news everywhere. And Sergeant Hope, it devastates me, and I'm not a police officer, and I'm certainly not a police officer like you who's been shot three times.
That's correct, and it's unfortunate they put a moratorium on death penalty. There are certainly several cases that's currently that state cases that do qualify. I think that the political culture of of death penalty is as the seated is promised, and I don't know what the remedy is, but repeat offenders and new time offenders, they don't have the capacity to have what can happen to them if something happens like this. They have no consequences in this today's society, and it's sad. I always said that we're here to protect and serve, but also better be respected than be feared. And there's a thin line between that right now.
So Officer Ritmanek was, she was Law Enforcement Officer of the Year in 2020. Of course, right? She was Law Enforcement Officer of the Year. And so it is no surprise that we're seeing all those pictures of so many officers who turned out to honor her. And then you see the guy who is alleged to have been so brutal that he would fling open a door, fire at the head of one officer, chase down another, ask his girlfriend to help cock the gun, and fight for the gun of the officer he's pinning down as she begs on her body camera for her life. The fact, Dan Eckhart, that there is body cam video of this happening, I don't ever like to say that anything is a slam dunk, but if there were a slam dunk, I would say this one would be it for both of them. Am I wrong?
Well, you know, it's always a good thing to have video evidence in a case. Coincidentally, I've got a case up in the Capitol that's like that, and obviously a whole different ballgame as far as the crime was committed. But yeah, that's something that any prosecutor just would relish, is to have video evidence of it. It sounds like from what you're telling me and from the news reports that that's what we have. And again, I think this is a case that is not going to be an issue for any state prosecutor to take, but there's just not that federal jurisdiction. We just don't see that. I haven't seen anything yet that lends itself to change my opinion that it should be a federal case that would be worthy of the capital punishment.
Here is my and listen, it I don't care what people's opinion is of capital punishment, but if it is for the worst of the worst in this country, that couple qualifies without a doubt. You know, staring a woman down as she's begging and then just unloading into her neck. I just want to read a little bit of that rap sheet because, like I said, it was such small print. It's hard to read it, but this is the couple that was in that Comfort Inn. This is Darius Sullivan's rap sheet, and he's only 25. So let's be clear. This rap sheet is only about 5-6 years old. I'm sure anything that might be before that we don't know about because that's juvie. You can see that a lot of the first stuff is like minor. It's traffic violations and, you know, license and possession of marijuana, etc., disregarding a stop sign, auto insurance. But as you get lower, and, you know, be patient because we got to get through a lot. It gets a lot more serious. Battery, theft, burglary, possession of a stolen firearm, assaulting a police officer with a deadly weapon. He had several active arrest warrants that night. Dan, how is it a guy like this is out on the streets anyway?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what happens typically, and I don't pretend to be an expert on Illinois practice, but I can just tell you, you know, having been a criminal defense attorney in Florida and a federal prosecutor in Florida, what happens is a lot of times state resources are limited. So these people, they'll commit a crime, they'll end up in custody just for a few months, a few days, and then they're kicked out. So their exposure to the criminal justice system is basically a slap on the wrist. They don't do much time. So that is the attraction of the federal system. So typically, if somebody is charged with a gun offense, felon in possession in a state matter, very little time. You push that over to the feds, you're going to do a lot of time. And so that's what happens. And so I've seen it in my practice on both sides of the ball as a prosecutor and defense attorney. I'll see people with extremely long criminal histories, and it blows their mind when they come into federal custody and look at the amount of time that they're potentially going to get if they're convicted.
Yeah. You know, my colleague Dan Abrams was covering a story the other night on the, you know, New York law enforcement changing the rules for who actually has to, get hauled in and who's going to go behind bars and who doesn't even qualify for bail anymore. And the threshold's getting real, real high. And one of the comments I think sticks from Live PD said was that, you know, when he was working in the gang unit in Tulsa, he said a lot of these guys are hard to get on the big charges, and so they wander out in the community wreaking havoc for years. And so one of the tools of law enforcement was to get them and get them behind bars, at least on these other smaller things, until they could gather enough on these bigger things, and at least that would keep the likes of us safe from monsters who maybe there just wasn't enough evidence gathered at that time. But you know, for this woman, for this officer of the year, that was not something that could keep her safe, let alone, you know, the rest of us as well. So I'd like to ask you, Sergeant Hope, about another aspect of this crime. And if this already isn't, you know, making people grit their teeth, this next detail might. Darius Sullivan's family members are now also under arrest. Let's start with mom. His mom is charged tonight with obstructing justice for allegedly lying to the police about Darius. And then Sullivan's brother is charged with harboring a fugitive. They are in Indiana, which is just next door, so it wasn't far away. But there are a lot of states around the country that give a pass to family members when it comes to harboring. Indiana ain't one of them. So, Dan, I'd like to ask you first your personal opinion of family members that would do this and whether you think they're headed to a nice lengthy prison stay as well.
Yeah, that's really a factually based question and answer. It depends on the level of support, I guess, that they gave the family member. And you don't see it that often. You don't see it prosecuted that often. It's something that happens, I don't want to say routinely, but, you know, it happens a lot. Family members are usually one of the first places that a fugitive will go to when he needs safe harbor. So, but given the nature of this case now with the police officer dying and the other officer struggling for his life, I think it's something that if given the opportunity, a prosecutor is going to take hold of.
Sergeant Hope, what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously, I would imagine you have some personal thoughts because there you are out on the beat. And not only is that, alleged killer, cop killer out there, and his girlfriend, another alleged cop killer, but mom, who apparently the apple may not fall far from the tree, and brother, same story.
Well, I was a homicide detective for over 15 years and also on the task force for homicide. And we ran across this problem quite a bit of time. The burden is great in order to charge additional family members. You have to prove knowledge. You have to find out what they did, how they did, and if it qualifies. A lot of times, you're not able to get that information in a timely fashion to go along with a case. If you do some additional things, you might be able to do it, but the burden is great on the law enforcement in order to make those kind of charges stick. I've had some success and some failures in trying to get additional family members charged or girlfriends or however. But it has been done, but not frequently.
Okay, Dan, just quickly, if you would, I just kind of look like, at this case, and I think it'll never see the inside of a courtroom. It'll just plead out, because what on earth could your defense be here? Do you see this as a pair of life sentences with a plea, or do you think everybody's going to have to go through the trouble of paying for, you know, public defenders and court time and prosecutions of these people?
Well, that's a good question. It's going to depend on the individual and the defense team. We had an officer slain here in Orlando just in the last 2 years. And I don't know that there was necessarily video evidence, but it was a case that I think there was pretty compelling evidence. It happened in public, daylight, and that individual took it to trial. So, you know, it's anybody's guess what they're going to do with this case. But one thing I did want to add on the subject, if I could volunteer this, there is legislation in 2021 to make the killing of any police officer, state or local, a federal crime. It's called the Defending Our Defenders Act of 2021. It's legislation. I'm not sure where it is, but it was proposed in 2021.
Well, there are so many politics around it. Right. Listen, Sergeant Daryl Hope, I'm glad that you're with us still, and I'm so sorry you've gone through what you've gone through. But like I said, thank God you survived. And Dan Eckhart, again, I appreciate your wisdom. Thank you to both of you.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you.
Okay, so I want to just do one thing before I move on to my next story, and that is I want to tell you something about Officer Rytmanik. She was a poet as well, but not just any poet. She was a published poet, and one of her poems actually was in her funeral program, and I want to read a piece of it to you, because when you hear what she wrote before she died in the line of work that she does, it's a bit chilling. Here's part of it. The color we bleed is that of deep blue. The blood that is shed is without asking for who. No time to be afraid, no time to cry. No choice in what we do, where we go, or when we die. The color we bleed is that of deep blue. All too often, one will pay the ultimate price. Those who wear the uniform accept this sacrifice. Beyond the call of duty, one day might be mine. No regrets, sorrow, or fear as I walk the blue line. The color I bleed is that of deep blue. And it's just hard to believe that this befell her. All right, I'm going to move on now to another case. This may not come as a surprise, but it was dramatic nonetheless. Three Georgia men heard a judge sentence them to life in prison today for the murder of Ahmaud Arbery, that young man who was shot dead after being chased down while jogging. Father and son Gregory and Travis McMichael were given life plus 20 years and no parole. Their friend William Roddy Bryant can ask for parole in his life sentence, but not for 30 years, and he's already 52 years old. He's on the left. The judge did something really interesting today and rare. Before handing down those punishments, he paused for a moment of silence in court. He was trying to highlight the fear that Ahmaud Arbery went through for the 5 minutes that he was being chased. The lawyers have all said they're going to appeal today's result, but that does not amount to even half of the problems these men face. Because next month, all three felons are facing new charges, federal ones, including hate crimes. In one of the videos that was not entered into evidence in this trial, the younger McMichael allegedly uttered the N-word over the dead body of Ahmaud. And these new federal charges carry with them a possible death penalty. Coming up, it's one of those stories that you honestly, you have to see to believe. Everything looks innocent enough until the man who is tying his shoelaces does this. Uses the shoelaces to try to strangle that woman. And the fight is on. How this happened, where it happened, and what's happened to the two people on the screen? That's next. There are things that you can do to prevent being a crime victim, and there are things, let's face it, you cannot. And that scares us all. For instance, you can lock your car doors, you can keep wads of cash out of sight, you can go low-key on the jewelry when you're in a high crime area. But there is literally nothing nothing that you can do to prevent yourself from going through what a Florida woman went through this week in Miami. It's broad daylight at a Miami bus stop. A man appears to be tying his shoelaces. It looks innocent enough, but what he's really doing is removing the shoelaces. And you can see him checking around to see if the coast is clear before he silently comes up behind the woman and attacks her, pulling those shoelaces around her throat in an effort to strangle her. She does all she can to fight him off and gasp for air. But even when she finally manages to break his grasp around her neck, he starts punching her wildly in the face, in the neck, all over her body, with no end in sight. And then a good Samaritan emerges. He appears to plead with the attacker, but even that doesn't stop the assault. A passerby gets involved physically and got the guy in a headlock, and it works. And the attacker eventually ran off. So now he's been dubbed by the police as the shoelace strangler. And get this, he was picked up wandering just a few blocks from where that woman was attacked. He's now been identified as 27-year-old Aaron Quinones. He's been charged with attempted felony murder. A security guard who was at the bus station helped to get that woman to safety, but unfortunately, there's no word on her condition tonight. The police say they can't release that information. And unfortunately, since we don't have prosecutorial documents on Mr. Quinones, we don't know her condition or where this is going to go. But if Quinones is found guilty, hopefully they'll lock him up for a very long time. But when we come back, how many Aaron Quinones types are out there? And what can you possibly do to prevent this kind of thing from happening to you? Police in America is next. For some people, packing heat is your best shot at self-defense. For others, it's learning martial arts. But what do you do when you can't even see your attacker coming? This unsuspecting woman was lucky to escape with her life after a man, police called the shoelace strangler, tried to choke her to death from behind. She didn't even know him. He's currently behind bars, and he is charged with attempted murder. Joining us tonight for Policing in America, three veterans of the smash hit TV series Live PD, Sheriff Mike Chitwood from Volusia County, Florida, Deputy Canine Officer James Craigmile, and finally Mike Ayers, who is a former team leader with the Greenville, South Carolina SWAT. Hello to all three of you. Somebody's got a lot of fun and music going on in the background. I wish I were you on a Friday night. But let's talk right off the bat about this incredible story in Miami. And, you know, Sheriff Chitwood, this is the story that makes me lose sleep at night, because I feel like I can control my environment just so far. And then some crazy person who's just hell bent on killing anybody, just anybody he comes in contact with, does this. And you can see she doesn't know who he is. She just thinks some guy's tying his shoe next to her. And this happens. And I just kind of wonder your take on this kind of criminal out there on the streets. How many of them really are there?
And Ashley, unfortunately, we don't know. You know, one thing I learned 35 years ago was human life on the street is cheap. You have people that have no respect for human life, no regard for human decency. And here's a guy that is willing to strangle. And imagine the force that is used to strangle another human being to death. No connection, not a former girlfriend. There's no passion. This woman is extremely lucky that she escaped with her life. And I don't know how you defend against that, Ashley. I really don't.
Yeah, well, it's pretty hard when you have video, right? That's usually one of the things that, you know, defense attorneys are really upset about. By the way, I hope I didn't say your name wrong. Did I say Chad Ayers or a different name? That would be crazy if I called you a different name. And I'm sorry if I did. Did I?
I think I heard Mike Ayers, but Mike, Chad, no! I'll go by whatever.
I think it was all that music or whatever's going on in the background. Okay, I'm going to do a completely different story here. I'm going to go up north from Florida and take you guys to Georgia, because I know you've heard the expression, when someone is charged with a crime and they walk, it usually means they get off, right? But in the case of this accused murderer named Kevin Wilson, there was a storm that knocked out the power to the computers at Effingham County Jail. That's the place where he was being housed. And lo and behold, a whole bunch of cell doors magically just opened, and that is what happened next. Kevin decided to take a little stroll in the evening, but kept going for 30 miles. Fortunately, he was caught by Savannah police 3 days later at a hotel. Deputy Craigmile, that's got to be one of those things that makes cops crazy, because you work so hard to get them locked up and then a storm just opens up the prison doors. I'm a little more surprised that the cell doors opened. What about the rest of the jail? Didn't that surprise you?
Yeah, it is. It's surprising, but it happens because technology can be our best friend or our worst enemy. In this case, it was our worst enemy. And this inmate who was in prison for murder was out on the streets and able to just get away. So it takes a lot of resources to be able to capture this suspect, to get him back to the prison. And that's where, you know, they use canines, they use state and federal law enforcement. So it's very difficult, and it's very disheartening whenever something like this happens. But we work together.
Yeah, he's back in, and we'll see what happens. I'm sure there's a couple of extra charges now that he's facing. But, you know, with being an accused murderer, I don't know if it's going to make a big difference. Okay, so here's another story. We all get mad at our GPS from time to time, but I am going to cut my GPS some slack, because there is one thing that it's never done to me, and it's this. Truck driver had a GPS that told him to take a shortcut. Oh, not a good idea. He was delivering goods in a mountainous area. The road over the 330-foot cliff began to get more narrow and more narrow. And it got so bad, the driver's like, hey, yeah, this isn't working out. He couldn't go any further. So what he tried to do was back up. Oh, look at that drone shot. There were two people in that cab. Holy Chad Ayers, if you were a police officer called to a scene like that, are you going to get in that cab to rescue those people? Like, how do you respond to something like that?
I tell you, Ashley, I'm not very fast, but if that was me driving that truck, you would have seen me exit it really quick. But, you know, with today's technology and the resources that, you know, the fire departments have to kind of help people out, you know, you've kind of got a risk versus reward there. On putting your life, you know, we're called to put our lives on the line. But, you know, luckily those people got out and the truck wasn't hanging off. But there's a time that you can put your life on the line and cause more damage than you can good.
330 feet worth of damage. I mean, holy Dinah. So I should let you know the driver and the passenger did escape that cab, but it took three dump trucks all chained together to actually pull that truck to safety. It happened just southwest of Beijing. Wow. Okay, next story. You've heard of cops racing to the scene, but have you ever heard of cops racing as part of the scene? Four officers decided to drag race on the suburban streets of Washington, D.C., where the speed limit was just 20 miles an hour. Bad enough they pulled the stunt, but unfortunately their cruisers crashed into each other, airbags deployed, all four officers injured, though not seriously. One officer was immediately fired. He was so new, he was still probationary. Two were cited for reckless driving and accepted a plea deal, and one is still fighting the charge. But Sheriff Chetwood, how come they weren't fired? How come the other ones weren't fired?
I have a better question. Why were they not arrested? We just saw an honest mistake made in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, where a woman is going to be sentenced to 10 years in prison. And these clowns, knowing what they're doing, completely put the community at danger. They should have been fired and arrested. They must have one heck of a union up there.
Well, they, you know, reckless driving, they accepted a plea deal, but one still, I just can't believe that they're still working. Okay, and I just want to tell you this incredible story as we close out, because it's great. A guy that we're calling Officer Fire and Ice, his real name's John Smith. He works for the Lewiston Police Department, just south of Niagara Falls. When a 10-month-old Labrador named Kona took off from her owner chasing a flock of geese, that little puppy didn't realize the ice was thin, and she went through 50 yards from shore. Officer Smith saw it all happen, and you tell me if you see any hesitation in his response. Take a look.
Hey, John, I don't think he's...
Where are they at?
She was in the kitchen.
Where's she at? How many people are still lost? Get out.
She's right here.
Get out.
Right here.
She's in the living room.
Hey, right here, officer.
Get out. Go.
Disperse that weight.
Dogs haven't, they'll be on the same side.
What's the dog's name? Kona. Dog's name is Kona.
Good girl.
Okay, Officer Fire and Ice, our video's got a little crisscross there, but you saw rescued Kona, and it turns out that 3 months earlier, he'd gone into a burning building, and he'd rescued a woman as well, an elderly woman. So I just wanted to close out our segment showing just some miraculous work by people like you, Chad Ayers, Sheriff Mike Chitwood, and Deputy Craig Mile. Thank you. Have a safe weekend, all three of you.
Thank you, Ashley. God bless you.
Thank you.
God bless you guys, too. Still to come, what this reality star was selling that made her think she was having a heart attack? Here's a clue. It's a gas, $100,000 worth. It's just one of the stories we didn't cover this week in other news. You know, every day when we put this show together, we sift through all sorts of news stories, trying to find, you know, what's most informative, most important, the news that we think is good to share with you. But in that process, I have to be honest with you, we come across so many stories. While they may be interesting, they're a little, say, on the fringe, right? You know what I mean? But it's been a very long week, and we thought, why not share some of these stories that we didn't cover this week in something we like to call In Other News? And the first one comes to us from the world of reality television. This is a real headline. 90-day fiance Stephanie Matto stops selling farts after experiencing serious health issues. Can I remind you, this is a real headline from a real newspaper. Story is apparently Ms. Matto was passing gas into jars and then selling them to people on the internet until the exertion made her think she was having a heart attack. She wasn't. She was okay. It was gas. But each jar cost $500 and people were buying them. Stephanie had already sold more than 200 jars. She literally says that all the gassy foods that she was eating in order to do this business were wreaking havoc on her system, so she quit. And that was in the news. Second story came to us from Las Vegas, and the headline read, "Man busted with severed head in truck stole the wrong vehicle, lawyer claims." Seriously, this was his defense. Eric Holland was found in a gold Chevrolet Avalanche containing coolers full of body parts. His lawyer says, yes, my client Holland, he did steal the truck, but he swears that he didn't know the body parts were in there. I don't think I need to tell you this. Crime doesn't pay because Holland is charged with murder. Obviously, we'll have to see if the jury believes his story of just stealing the truck, didn't know what was in it. So our next headline is also a crime story. It comes out of Madrid, Spain, and the headline reads, "Italian mafia fugitive arrested after being spotted on Google Maps Street View." Gioacchino Gamino, that's his name, Gioacchino Gamino, was on the run for 20 years. He was an escaped murderer, but he was spotted on the Google Street View feature, and one of Google's cars had snapped this photo, or at least a photo. This is actually the one that it snapped back in 2018, and it's outside of a fruit shop that he owned near Madrid. Somebody recognized the picture, and the police moved in, but it was lucky that he was shot only by a camera. Obviously, he is no longer a free man. So next up, story out of Cambridge, Ohio, and the headline reads, "Ball of human hair weighing 225 pounds breaks record." The ball of hair is nicknamed Haas. I'm not making this up. It was started by a hairstylist named Steve Warden. It is made entirely of human hair and glue. That is the grossest thing I think I may have ever seen. But I guess the people at Guinness, the world records folks, say that, okay, if it's 225 pounds, it is indeed the largest ball of human hair ever. And they said that it beats the world record of 55 pounds by the previous holder. Congratulations. Now, where do you store that? I wonder what it smells like. Final headline of the week. It comes to us from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And the headline reads, anger, disappointment. Woman finds gifts in luggage replaced with dog food. And the story goes, when Gina Sheldon opened her luggage after an 11-day trip to Europe, she was absolutely shocked to see that all the Christmas presents she had packed and brought home in her luggage were gone. And instead, in their place, dirty T-shirts, empty shampoo bottles, and for whatever reason, dog food. Imagine, that's what you're coming home with after Christmas. Sheldon, obviously pretty mad about this whole thing, says she called the airline to find out what on earth happened to her stuff, and says she was left on hold for a total of 20 hours. That is not a typo. It's not 20 minutes. It's 20 hours total. And she says that she is still waiting for answers. And I'm just here to tell you, Gina, I lost a bag once. And it was 20 years ago. And I still don't have it. And it had some of my favorite things in it. It was somewhere between here and Afghanistan. That is some of what we found in other news this week. And we'll continue to update you as we continue to get this kind of news. All right, still ahead, you know, I was surprised when I woke up this morning. I think you might have been surprised when you heard that we've lost a legend. Sidney Poitier, Hollywood trailblazer, paved the way for generations of other performers. Coming up, we've got to look back at his career and his life. Welcome back. We're going to end our show tonight remembering the groundbreaking actor Sidney Poitier. If you don't know his work, it is worth studying up because he starred in so many celebrated films, including In the Heat of the Night, To Sir With Love, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and Lilies of the Field. He was the first African-American winner of the Best Actor Oscar. He also got the Kennedy Center Honors and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And oh, by the way, he was knighted by Queen Elizabeth, the legendary Sidney Poitier, dead today at the age of 94.